We're going to hear ion early interaction. This is a year before RNA drops. December 8th, 2009.
Everybody that's joining us, welcome. Just relax. Be easy about all this. This is an ESP exercise, which means that you're building through contrast your efficiency of activating a gift. And Bob, he archives the archives of the archives, so we might as well get an archival record. Here's what you do. You focus in your mind, in your picture. Like, for example, if you had on a radio or a pea pod or a chip box or a TV box or something, and you see the mouths moving but you can't quite hear, and then you kind of really focus on hearing so you can understand, so it's kind of low. And sometimes it's the case when it's booming very, very loud, so much so that the audio kind of makes it difficult to get the actual clairvoyant words that are being emitted that your speaker is picking up on. Well, that's sort of what you can do here. It makes it very simple and easy to just sort of focus on these things that you think you're hearing. And you're not sure if you understand, but that's okay, because as you give your divided attention to it, what happens is it clears out the white noise in your mind with your divided attention. And what you'll find is you'll start getting thoughts. They're just there, and you don't know where they came from. Maybe it's something in your remembrance. Maybe it's something just hot off the press. Maybe it's you forgot to pay your cable bill, or something will come into your mind. Those just ambient thoughts then all of a sudden set the score of what you're listening to. And once the score of what you're listening to is sort of balanced with the focused attention of activating a gift within your ESP extrasensory perception, then it gets easier and easier and easier. And then you'll start knowing and having a topic. Many engage our show, and they're practicing this process. They're learning it. They're smoothing off the rough edges, and they think about things. And then they'll get the archives to listen to them to see if their topical response got through or not, depending on which way our hostess is running the show at this particular moment. Then it gets to be fun because they start syncing up. They start thinking about pickled herring. Well, who thinks of pickled herring and why? And then they start thinking of moose. Well, who in the world has ever thought one time ever of mooshu, like the Chinese dish of mooshu pork or mooshu shrimp, but a mooshu moose? And then you think, then you hear it and you go, I was thinking about that. And we're like, yes, that's exactly how this thing works. And then you're syncing up the perceptions. And that's what makes this a delicious, fun exercise that allows an interaction, and it activates the gifts, which is what we're always about. It also lets you more easily recognize that you indeed have a non-physical. That's whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, and then you can push against it. Please yourself, you marvelous creator. It still doesn't negate the non-physical. And that activation then all of a sudden starts giving you an extra set of hands, an extra player and orchestration. You have an in with the umpire. Pick your descriptive adjectives there because they're your very own. Then what happens is you can very succinctly start knowing that you have this. And that knowing is the secret that we're trying to get you to the place of activating all day, every day, in your process of becoming what you call an enlightened capital man, or maybe that's what Thoth thought about it.
Excellent. We've finished the intro.
That's, yes.
The how-to is very good. We haven't had that before. It took 34, 35 sessions to get to it. That's great. Number one,
participated in the show last week. I asked Ion what images did he get from number one when he and his friend were sending them. Ion picked up that it was marshmallows and mackerel fish. And so I told him that. He wrote back, this is number one, I don't remember sending those two images, but we did send marmoleum.
Well, if you mix those together, you'd be very close to that, wouldn't you?
That's right. And it actually says it's a natural flooring product.
Uh-huh.
I don't know it. And then he says, I suppose marmoleum does sound similar to marshmallow.
And mackerel.
And mackerel. Yeah, marmoleum could be a fish. Could be a fish, marmoleum.
Well, if you notice right after that, we were saying holy mackerel.
Holy moly.
Yeah, holy moly and holy mackerel.
Marmoleum. So actually, you've got it all in there. That's it.
And see how fun, because it's fun. That's the trickery. And it's not a trick, but it's a trick if you've never done it before and don't have the resonance, because you humans are always looking for this impeachable, empirical, insufferable evidentiary example that you use to gauge the distance between you and you of how you are doing. When if you could just be easy with the whole process and let it flow, then in like this experience, it just becomes fun. And fun is what it's all about. Humans get all tangled up. They get caught up in their past, their present, their future, and their future's anticipation that they can't get where they want to go. And then their past is their fear that it's going to come out the way it came out before. And then their now gets all crossed up with how their now is working out in collation with their past experience for their future wantings. They have a desire, and before they even give it a chance to show up, they've left that desire, crossed it off the list, and moved on to something else, so much so that they've got the queue so full of their order, the UPS truck can't get it to them fast enough. Before it ever gets to their door, they've sent the cancel notice to take it back. Well, the trucks are rolling day and night trying to get you what you're asking for, and you don't get mad at the UPS man for delivering it. That'd be a good example of non-physical. When FedEx comes, it's not personal. They're just delivering the parcel, you see. So it's that connection that kind of comes through, just like this gift. This was one of many spiritual gifts that allow you to come into your fullness. And when you come into your fullness, then guess what? There's very little emptiness.
The gift is one part of your fullness. It's not all the fullness.
No, not at all. But it's a good place to, it's a good simple way, the rote addition of simply acknowledging your place. You realize there are many humans who won't even acknowledge their place. So it's very difficult to get in line when you won't even acknowledge that you have a position.
What is their place? You mean their point of view, or that they are something?
They are.
They deny
that. See, that they're not some nebulous something that got squirted from the heavenlies, that this God out there somewhere is going to judge them based upon their actions. And then they get crossways with the Messiah syndrome, when if they could come into their place of knowing that that power was greatly trusted within them, from them, you can trust yourself. See, trust becomes a great big issue of who's doing what and who's telling the truth and who's telling the lie and who's pandering for resources and on and on and on. And you spend so much time trying to navigate, you can play with that another day, but navigate this process of being undupable, that they miss the goodness of all that is. If you spend all day every day thinking about the perils of cheesecake, you'll never enjoy the deliciousness that is indeed cheesecake. You'll eliminate that from your possibility. And if you engage it before you work that out, it'll probably give you cancer. And that'll be the new war on cancer, is cheesecake incarnate. The cheesecake is activating the cancer cells. So you'll have a piece of cheesecake and just go straight on and get you a dose of chemotherapy.
Okay.
It's amazing that the simplicity of how the process gets misconstrued into the position of being less than.
So if someone is vague and denies their place because they're reacting to the idea that there is something outside themselves, a creator who's watching them. So they actually say, well, I better not be too definite what I do because I'll get judged. So because they have the specter of judgment looking at them, they keep themselves vague so they don't look like they've made an action that could be judged. Is that accurate? Oh,
correct. And any action they've taken, then they have to watch out to see how the judge is going to react to their statement, their present statement.
Now, there's different extremes of people, humans' participation in that, but everybody has that dynamic in them to one degree to another, right?
Yes, they do.
And that's the labyrinth of your mind juggling with the physical and non-physical.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And the fullness would be all three tuned in and exploding or vibrating or resonating all together. That's full fullness.
And the only place you'll find yourself there in that position is now. It will not be in some nebulous future. It will not be in some deep, dark cave of your past. It will only be experienced now. They keep talking about that life is a journey, not a destination. Well, that sounds pretty glib when you start saying it that way. It's more of those platitudes that people get all tangled up with to fake it till you make it and only think good thoughts, and then if you think one bad thought, it's over. Well, see, that starts your whole judgment process. Dion, I just can't think good thoughts all the time. That's okay. That's how you figure out what a good thought is. Because we're saying there are no bad thoughts. What's a bad thought? Oh, there's lots of bad thoughts. You can think evil things. Well, evil, you know how we feel about that. It's only the dynamic of how you choose. If you prefer vanilla ice cream over chocolate, that does not make chocolate evil.
Okay, so I just had a thought there. Losing it. What were you just saying a minute ago? Okay, so I got the one before, but I had a newer one. Okay, so there's...
Give him up, Carolyn, before you... Zion, what's this got to do with pate?
Yeah, no,
that's
wait a minute.
All we need to worry about.
Well, I'm going to go back to the previous one. The idea that people think they're on guard, that they're not duped. So that means that they're on guard, that something external is influencing them. They do not want to be influenced. So they're very careful that they're being not being set up. So what is the real meaning of that? Does that connect back to just
fear? Fear from their past.
Yeah, but fear. Okay, they think, oh, I've experienced pain, and I'll probably get it again, and I better be on guard because someone's going to move me in that direction of getting pain again, so I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen or put it up.
And when you do that, guess what you do? You give that your undivided attention, so don't worry, it's on its way. The UPS, the trucks are rolling.
So
you may or may not have to sign for it at the door, but I promise you in a very short window of time, it's merrily, merrily on its way.
You say fear is an aspect of not wanting to be duped, but is it also you don't want to take in an external influence? Because you actually say, I'm the universe, I create my own space. There's no way someone's going to fool me into thinking they're influencing my universe because they can't, because I'm the center of my universe.
Correct.
That
correct.
Truism gets distorted into saying, I'm not going to be duped by something not in my universe, which is silly.
Well, it's not silly because it's where people are. You got to give respect to it because it's where people are. Now, you understand it sounds a little silly, and it is, but we're trying to soften it so people non-physical call me silly. See, I told you I was less than. I knew I couldn't do it. I'd hoped for so much more. I had masturbations of marvelous, grandiose, illumined
marvelosity. Marvelosity.
Marvelosity, yes, Lord. And see, he said we were silly, and I just can't take it anymore. I just knew she was going to drop. I just knew it was coming. I just didn't know when. And I'd hoped for so much more. See, even that place resonates with the individual human creator, and they'll use these fabulous, beautiful, simple, easy, a two-year-old gets it without being told it, position that they are indeed impenetrable. cannot be penetrated. Their feelings never could be hurt. Their feelings could never be hurt. Because whoever it is that's trying to hurt your feelings, you won't even notice or give them a minute of your attention.
Yeah, you're talking about young babies, young people.
No, we're talking about, the young babies get that naturally, but it's those old, dried-up, crotchety ones that seem to have the most fun with it. Well, if you live long enough, you'll be hurt. Okay, so it's only the good die young, okay?
So you're saying that if you get it when you're old, you don't care what anybody thinks. Is that what you were saying?
If you can, that's great, because if you could do whatever you were going to do without any fear or degradation that it was going to hurt someone's feelings, then guess what? Your feelings would then become unhurtable. Somebody would be stepping on you, and you'd say, yeah, excuse me, you know, you're stepping all over me. And they'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to encroach on your space. And we'd say, no, you misunderstood. You didn't encroach on my space because you're not that powerful. I'm much more powerful as far as my space in my world. I was just letting you know before you got hurt.
Before they got hurt by you.
Yeah,
by you. Before I smacked you.
You don't even have to do that. It's like you're treading in my space, and if you're going to tread in my space, then you got to realize you're in my space. Just so you know that you're in my space, it will be to your own peril.
Well, okay, you're implying you'd smack them. You said,
well, but it's
you,
not,
I'm just letting smack. You know before you got hurt.
Yes.
It's just a play on the reverse of you and me getting hurt. But I'm saying, but it doesn't mean you're going to smack them.
Don't have to. Don't.
But it implies that, right? It's implied.
Yes.
That's how they take it. But they'd also hear the irony of the word because they thought they hurt you. No, I'm just warning you that you're on the road to getting hurt.
You're in my space, and I wanted to give you a good heads up before you got crossways of yourself, and it could go south.
I remember what I was trying to remember 5 minutes ago. You had laid out those platitudes. What were the think good thoughts, and there was two or three others. We need to put them on our website. Because, you know, other mediums say, basic 10 points you learn from so-and-so, from the medium. And they list 10 platitudes. You are immortal, you this. We ought to put the three platitudes from Ion. Bad platitudes. Think good thoughts, you know, the other two that you mentioned.
Do you make it?
Yes. Somehow post that and the other one. On our site is the opposite. You know, we're saying we're not posting platitudes that you match with. We're pointing out ones we're not. We're not saying what we are. We're pointing out what we're not. What do you think of that?
Right. So it would be the 10-point guide of platitudes you do not have to engage in order to become enlightened.
Very good. Very good. That's it. That's the sentence.
Okay, you'll start off. Fake it till you make it.
Think good thoughts. Was that one?
Yes. Only think good thoughts, and all will be well. Master your possibilities.
Right, we don't like that one?
No.
Master your possibilities.
Because possibilities are those things you can't get to.
Okay.
Now, if you said master the impossibilities, we're all over that. We're on that. You know what you don't have. You want to know what you can have. You know what you can't do. You want to know what you can do. You already know what you can't do. And that's caused you much issue.
So master your possibilities is working with what you know you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, the issue is to work with what you can't do.
Yes.
Desire
is not the unquenchable desire to enlightenment.
Desire is not the unquenchable desire to enlightenment.
Correct. Let's see.
But see, where it's more the phrases. You're starting to get into more aphorisms, like make it, you know, things that people say, ordinary slang speech. Fake it till you make it. Think good thoughts, and then the rest of whatever it was. And then there was a third one, which you have said before, but we can't remember. But those kind of, it's like, you know, tossed off, almost phatic expressions, phatic. Their amiability statement.
Would this be one like Jesus saves, but St. Peter withdraws?
That's a joke. These aren't jokes. These are like...
Well, we're just being cheeky so it can be fun. Because at the end of the day, if it's fun, then very good. Because that's what you forfeit. See, everything has to be so damned serious. Everything has got to be the end-all of end-alls. And there's just no end-all. There is no end.
Well, you said that we didn't want to be dupable because of an earlier fear. And the point is, kids are created in fear. I mean, eventually the fear thing goes into the kid. You can't get through childhood without some crazy fear things in your mind.
Yes, you can. If you don't have somebody standing over you with a stick saying, don't do that, that'll kill you, don't do that, that'll kill you. That doesn't happen too often. Well, but, you know, say that's like air.
No, that's the point. 99% of humanity has someone standing over them as a kid, when they're a kid, and they get these things put in them, and therefore you do think life is serious. So what would you tell parents? You know, like, you know the parents are going to resist the idea that they're not going to let their kid just walk.
Well, then we say, good, that's contrast, and sit them down at an early age and teach them when to activate the jihadist in them.
I missed that. You said, what did you say about contrast?
It'll set up the contrast. That's fine. Go right ahead. And we'll rock along a few millennia from now. We'll say, how's that working for you? And then we'd say, Mama, you're right. Sit that child down early on and teach them how to make the early, young, fresh jihadist come out in them. And a mother would say, oh, I would never do that. No, 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 that's beyond it. So then you go, oh, okay. But every other dynamic that you cram down their throat to conform them, to mold them into this capacity that they are gonna be, by God, you will do what I say. Well, and they say, well, yes, I'm God, and we'll see how it comes out. Because they're not going to have it. Look, that's where your flower children came from. That's where your rock and roll music came from. That's where all your what you call aberrations, where the youngsters would sow their wild oats. If they're not wild, they've never been sown before. You're trying to get them to germinate in a jar, and they're not going to do that. So that's your revolutions that come when they come along. And the folks get pushed and pushed and pushed till they go, you know what? You've pushed me just about the last time you're going to push me. Now, I don't know how this is going to come out, but me or you one is fixing to get a whipping. I don't know which one, but one of us is bring it on. We're fixing to tie up. Well, when you come into that place where you take your power, guess what happens? The same way when you have a bully on the playground, you punch that bully in the belly or in the nose one time, and guess what? You've made a friend for life, and he's no longer a bully.
The parents, though, they still lord it over the kids, but they don't say think they're making a jihadist, but they do the middle of the way.
And they are.
They are by their
conform,
by their
conform or die. Conform, no. Conform or die.
So you
conform
could,
or die.
In other words, there's not high conformity demands, lukewarm conformity demands, and low conformity demands. Any one of those is still conformity.
That's correct. But here's how you do it if you're asking. Are you asking? Is that what you're trying to get to, or are you just...
I'm asking about advice for parents, because...
Get off your kids.
But how do you do that? But let me just say this. Ayanna said before, if you see your kid crawling towards a cliff, do not stop them. Now, that's a statement by Ayanna.
You can't.
All right, but wait a minute. Try to explain that, because you know the average scared human is not going to allow their child to walk towards a cliff. So let's see you prove or somehow explain why they can't do that.
Because you have the news all day, every day, if this young child fell off the cliff. If they're watching over their every movement, their every step, and their every gauging point, how could any calamity ever befall a child?
But they do.
But they're watching. See, they should have been watching them closer. No. See, it gets all crossways. That fear particulate is what sets that all into motion. If you tell your daughter you're not going to date that boy, that's coming, his hair's long, he doesn't come from a good family, you can do better than that. You're not going to see him. I forbid you to see him again. Well, you might as well go ahead and start ordering the flowers because the wedding is on.
Okay, and we understand. I'm talking about the early period. How can a parent accept that, and you're saying, well, and there occasionally are kids who get die, go off the cliff, and why'd that happen? The parent was negligent.
It's not negligent. It is not negligent.
What is it?
It is that the child with the fastest path of good joy was to transition.
So did primitive societies have this attitude? What we call primitive societies, you know.
They certainly did, and so much so that the shaman of the tribe, if a baby came out and wasn't just perfect, he'd just chuck him over the cliff himself.
So,
well, you laugh, but that's what they did. And they are the forerunners of your genotypes that make your RNA click within your DNA strands. And now run from that one a little bit in your past ramifications.
Wait a minute, you said they're the kids who get thrown over are the frogs?
No,
What is it that is the forerunner? What, the shaman?
No, the ones left setting your DNA.
Okay, wait a minute. You said they were the forerunners. We were talking about a shaman throwing a damaged baby over the cliff. So
yes.
What is the word forerunner referring to? The baby thrown over the cliff?
The ones left having babies that survive to make generations that let you come into your place that let you have opposing thumbs.
All right, so you're saying the ones that didn't get thrown over, we should be thankful because they were strong and made us stronger or some kind of resilience or... Is that what you're saying?
That they survived.
So you're saying...
See, back in those days, the tribe, it wasn't about that. You lived until you were no more, okay? And there wasn't any degradation of that process. There wasn't this fear base of you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to make good grades, you can't be a dumb cluck, you gotta do so well.
They didn't even say death or transition was a problem. They didn't know any better, so to speak.
They didn't know any better, that's right, Aaron. They didn't know any worse. I guess that's the way to say it. They didn't know any worse. Now, you know worse than that, and like your mother would say, you know better than that. No. She'd say, well, you know worse than that. Yes, Mom, I do. I know lots worse than that. Okay, then play with those things, and then you can appreciate where you are. And then where you are becomes okay. And I want you to know, here's how this is going to work. I'm a lover who loves, so therefore I'm going to love. Now, in my house, there are parameters that will be respected, meaning... My world, I run my way. And you're welcome to join and take part, you fruit of my loin, seed of my sin that brought you forth. You're welcome to participate. I'll even feed you. I'll get Pop-Tarts just because Pop-Tarts are fine. But you're the marvelous creator, and if you want something in your experience, you can create it. You don't need me to validate your power. Little babies that are born, they're going to cry. They cry till they get what they want. They're wet, they cry till they get what they want. They don't even tell you. You're the marvelous creator. You got to figure it out if they're hungry or colicky or wet or hot or cold or mad or sleepy or ill or blah, 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 blah. They demand it. They don't care. They don't ask forgiveness. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm crying because I'm wet. You won't change me. I'm sorry I messed up your time. I'm sorry I intervened in your space. They go to hell with that noise. Hey, I'm hungry. I'm eating and I want to eat now. Carolyn, what is laid out on the counter? I'm hungry. I want to eat now. Carolyn, do we have anything later? Yes, Bob, we have. Okay. Am I supposed to eat that? Yes, Bob, okay. Well, see, that becomes fun because they do that. Then they come in and they get to, you have to train them. And then they go in there and they look at the porcelain garden and they look at where the potty is and they look at their mom and they're like, you want me to do what? Where? You know, excuse me, you've got to be kidding. In this pit that rolls down and things disappear and never come back. You expect me to participate in this process. Well, the moral to the story of this is if you could just back off your kids a little bit, they're going to do just fine. They're going to do it despite you.
On the toilet issue, are you saying they should not be toilet trained?
Well, trained, no.
How do they get to use the toilet?
They'll figure it out.
So you let them you know, do their, eliminate themselves all over the house until they figure it out.
Well, now that's your house. So it might be better, like your litter box, just put them in the porcelain gardens and then let them do it there, you see.
Well, that's what I thought you were saying. Why do you want me to do that? That they objected to the porcelain garden.
They do, but see, the process of how it's done is way easier when you don't push against it. When all you do is let them know how much better it is, and then you're not messed up, and you don't have to mess up your clothes, and it works out so much better, and how clean and refreshed you are when you use the facilities when you gotta go, and you don't wet all over yourself and get all chafed, and it's just so much better if you would engage or embrace this particular thing. The same way with getting them to eat mashed potatoes.
Okay, hold it. So, I'm not getting, like you're saying, they come and they overreact to the porcelain garden. Why, you want me to do that? But you're saying you do tell them to do it, but I think you were...
You help them with that as an opportunity, not as a command.
Oh, okay, not so commanding.
Yeah. Dad, can I ride my bicycle off the porch? Well, sure, son. Dad, I'm not going to ride my... I can't ride my bicycle off the porch. And we go, son, we couldn't stop you. You'd do it when we weren't looking. You'd do it when we were home. We said, if we said, whatever you do, do not ride your bicycle off those steps. It may have never dawned on them before until you said that. You go like, that mean old daddy is trying to keep me from my bliss and my joy. And all the answers of the universe would be if I could just ride my bicycle off the stairs. And we go, knock yourself out. Go right ahead. And when they know, this can't be a blowjob. It's got to be real. You've got to mean it. Mm-hmm. In the way that they're raised, it can't just pop off with it. You've got to be sincere and genuine with the process.
And say, you go ahead and do it and mean it.
Go right ahead. Go right ahead. And leave it just like that. Or if it's something that you just can't do it immediately and you want to kind of ease into it, you might say, well, that sounds very interesting, Johnny. Why do you think you want to ride your bicycle off the steps? Well, I don't know. It'd just be cool. And we go, okay, very good. Let's proceed. We understand. And then they decide, because they're going to decide anyway. That's what we're here to tell you all day, every day. They're going to decide anyway. And everything that you push against to such a degree that make it taboo, that adds an allure to the whole process. They will figure it out for themselves. They have their own non-physical. You don't have more non-physical than they have. Matter of fact, them coming fresher from source, they should be telling you what to do.
Oh.
It would be much easier because you're the ones that have created all this contrast and sidewindedness to the point that you've confused your own self with yourself. The distance between them and them is much closer, mostly, than the distance between you and you. The more you find to fuss and worry about, the more there'll be to fuss and worry about. Then there's more there is to fuss and worry about, the more you'll have to fuss. Then you'll have to fuss and worrying about fussing and worrying to the point where you just get tired and say, I've had enough. If this is the best life is, I think I'll just go on to my heavenly reward.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what happens. They choose to check out. They're like, you know, I don't know how many times I've got to renew this book, but I'm getting pretty old. The same plot, same story, same chapters. I've read it and read it and read it and read it, and I've turned it inside out. I've studied it. I've looked for this synchronicity within the words and the verbiage, and I keep reading the same book over and over and over again. Okay, I've got it down pat. I'm done. Do I have to read this book one more time? The point is that you could exchange that book for a new book, for a new book, for a new book, for a new book, and continue on your journey of the reading world rather than getting caught and trapped in your own less than-ness.
Yeah, and you were talking about parents there. The parents.
Well, that's right. And then you come to a place to where the parents become the head or the figure for the child, and it just does not work. Now, you can't make your children do anything anyway, all right? But you can encourage them by offering opportunities, choices. For example, brushing your teeth, okay? You can show them how to do it, make it fun, show them that process, let them know how good it feels and what fun it is to have a nice, clean, fresh mouth. But don't worry, the first time a pretty little girl quality, bring forth the best of them, presenting themselves to that little cute chick with the short skirt trying to catch his eye. He'll comb hair, tuck shirts in. My stars, it's just amazing what feats will be wrought.
Parents encounter a newborn baby.
They respond to every need of that baby, whether they want to or not, or whether they like it or not.
Okay, so the parent, though, assumes that the baby's a delight, but it is in need and inferior and needs to be protected. That's
correct.
False assumption one.
Number
one. They should say, no, this baby's come in and has arrived and is smarter and more protected than you will ever be.
It's smarter than you.
We assume it's needy, but you're saying, no, look at the baby as someone who's arrived and is more powerful than you immediately. And then you should sit back and watch them explore that rather than think you need to guide it.
Right. Would you like proof of that?
Okay.
A four-year-old can program a remote control on a TV, and parents would have to go to college again to figure it out. And they walk up and intuitively go, click, 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 okay. Now your Blu-ray is synced up with your Bose and your... They just get that just because they come in cable ready. They come in fresh from the Gulf with unrealized creations. They become fresh. They haven't. Nobody told them they couldn't program the remote control.
Yeah, now they can instinctively learn a language. Parents should recognize that technologies around them are new languages that they can pick up just like they pick up English or French or Italian.
Yes,
right.
And the language they pick up more than that is that drawing or longing to please. See, attention is attention. They'll misbehave to get the attention. They'll get a spanking to get their attention because they want to be loved. And if that means that they have to misbehave to get mama's undivided attention, guess what? They got mama's undivided attention.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a good day.
Okay. One doesn't exist unless you have someone else to interact with and kind of show you who you are by their reactions to you. So if that's the common medium of human consciousness, then kids don't care. If the parent is not acknowledging the kid doesn't know who they are, or they feel like they're nobody. They need to interact. So they don't care the content of the interaction. They just want the medium of exchange, of attention.
Absolutely. 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 So you spend time with your kids. You love your kids because you first learn how to love yourself. You learn to love yourself. Then it becomes a marvelous engagement. Because then they're talking to you, they're asking you questions, and what is this, and how does that, why? And the reason they say why, you say, oh, well, they don't know. No, they're questioning, what in the world are you talking about, because it's the silliest thing that they've ever heard in their life. They're not asking why because they don't know, they're asking why in the name of a living God would you have that as an opinion?
Yeah, why are you even talking?
Exactly. Exactly. Why?
Why are you?
Well, you have to, because why? Well, because this is how it's done. Why? And then they should have said, who said? If they said, who said, then the only thing left for mom then is, I said. Okay. Well, then I guess we're down the rabbit hole so far now, it's over. So
that just reminds me something. I was known as a kid who asked why, like, questions too much. I was just thinking, man, I kept my babyhood, why going, still doing it. Why?
Why? And that becomes superfluous, you see. Because then what happens is you engage with your kids know you love them, you love yourself, you show them how you engage your own power. You talk to them, you communicate to them, you can share your wishes. Son of mine, daughter of mine, I would like for you to excel in your schoolwork so you can be exposed to lots of things, so you can choose better because you're enlightened. Child of mine, I'd like you to use language that would be what you call, there is no immoral language, but there's called good manners and decorum within and without society. And I'll show you and help you master the English language where you can say much worse things than just something what you call vulgar. You know, then you're not calling your mother a two-timing bitch just because that's not very respectful. She very well may be, and you may be speaking the truth, as you call it, empirical or otherwise, but that's not the point, you see. But you can also twist that around and help them understand the language to such a degree that they can call you much worse things than that. They won't even notice or know. So it's called mastering this possibilities or impossibilities. But you engage them and see a kid, they're scared to death of things. But once they play with it and get it under their belt, then they'll tell you quick as once you learn a bike, you never forget. Well, that engagement then becomes they'll figure this out and they'll figure that out. The same way that you come to the place of your beingness, only in their fresh sense of now. But you can't control every dynamic. Try it. Good luck with it. Good luck with it. You're going to have this grade point average. You're going to do this way. This is my house, and you're going to follow my rules. And when you get out, you go get your own world, and then you can do what you want to. Well, guess what? They are already anyway. But now you can have parameters within your world. Here it is. You're going to eat my food. You're going to drive my car. You're going to live in my world. You know, in my world, we go to bed by 11 o'clock. So therefore, without some information exchange, then you will be home at 11 o'clock. Okay? And that's just because of how you run your world. And then if they're not home by 11 o'clock, there's no reason to scream or have all these problems and all this kind of stuff. Just lock them out of the house. And guess what? They'll figure it out real quick. Or let them come in late and then take the wheels off the car. Take the wheels off the car and put them away. Sorry, son, those are my tires. Matter of fact, that's my car. Matter of fact, you know what? You're not engaging. If you're a marvelous creator, and you are, get your own means of transportation. Then we won't have to have this conversation again. And then what happens is they learn that the fastest path to their joy, which is getting to use the car that they didn't have to pay for and put gas in and insure and take care of and put gas and oil in and, you know, behave with and get them to the show or to the concert or so they can get to the next place to tweet faster so they can learn how to do it even better. They'll start participating from a level of degree if they not even stop by the market and bring home a gallon of milk just because it's a nice thing to do. But you can't lord it over them. What you got to do is explain that life is a participation sport. Many times people get so tangled up looking at the donut that they focus only on the hole. You got to enjoy the donut and forget about the hole. There's always going to be a hole. Don't worry about the hole. Enjoy the donut.
Why isn't it the hole? Who looks at the hole?
We have never figured it out. We have never figured it out. But it always is focused on how large the hole is. Does it have a hole? Where the hole is? The donut. It's great. That's its shape. That's its fine. Then they go to eat around and they go, wait. Then they even make donut holes now that people can buy the holes and not have the donut. But apparently it's got to be in a different dynamic. But it's a very interesting concept. It's a very minimal place of understanding because we don't understand it either, but yet that's what they seem to do.
Okay, here's another angle. What does Ion say about single-parent families? Is that a problem for the child, or the child wouldn't know, and if you don't make an issue out of it, it's not a problem for the kids?
They need both parents. They don't need either.
Ah, that's another point. Yeah, they don't need parents.
They don't need either. They don't require either.
All right, I put in the word need. We can't use that. Is it beneficial to the child to experience two kinds of adults around them?
Is it just two? Is that the only choice?
Okay, others, but the basic...
Molly might have two daddies.
Right.
Then what you going to do?
Well, that'd be two adults. I'm saying that is it useful for the child to experience adults, 1, 2, 3, 10? But you just said they don't need them, but, you know, I don't think you meant need in a negative way, but they don't...
Yeah, we do.
They don't need them.
We don't need either. You don't need any.
Because there's no need.
There is no need. That's correct. So they don't need a parent.
So the kid, the wolf kids, are these famous cases where the kids were brought up by animals. No problem there.
No problem, actually. Most of society would fare better
if they were brought up by animals.
Yeah, or just, you know, send them to the cabbage patch and let them figure it out for themselves. Because, Bob, get this. If you don't get anything else today, and the whole wide world is listening, get this. They don't care what you think anyway. They don't care. They don't give you
but
a will.
But they do require attention.
They don't require it. They don't require it. But they learn very quickly that that's how they get it. That's how they get it. If they scream and cry long enough, they'll finally take you to the doctor.
Right.
They won't give you attention. The doctor
they require gets. Attention.
Well, they want interaction. They don't
interaction.
Want
let's call that. Yeah,
they don't
they
need attention. They don't want attention. They want interaction.
Because it's a way of knowing yourself by interacting. Like,
well, it's a way of recognizing yourself.
Right. McLuhan said objects are unobservable. Only relationships among or between objects are observable. That's the thing. A child by himself is an object. It's not observable. It interacts with something, then it's observable.
How effective would glue be if you didn't have anything to attach it to?
Let's ask the crowd of listeners if they have any answers for that.
If you never glued anything together, how effective would glue be?
Well, it's obvious. It would not be effective.
Well, you say it's obvious, but then nobody's ever thought of that before. And you go, well, that's pretty the silliest thing we've ever heard in our life. And we go, now, so you've got to have glue in your life to make it. Not if nothing needs stuck together, not if you don't have to paste anything, not if you don't break anything. Now you require no glue. You can live glueless happily ever after. But yet, sometimes it's good to have a little paste around in case something slips off or something and you'd like to patch it on a bit. Then that becomes a way to subdue a particular contrasting experience. If you break something you like and you don't want to lose it, you want to paste it back together. We're not pushing against it. We're just saying that that's not a prerequisite of surviving. The most fabulous human creators are those that come to a place where early on they're allowed to be themselves.
Did I have that experience when I was
You dropped? Did.
Yeah, I think I did.
And they almost never dropped you on your head.
Yeah, I did once, but
And you fared all right, huh?
Yeah, when I think of it, I hardly knew them.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, parents will get all crossways with this, and they go, we love our children, we're going to give the best to our children. Are you? What are you giving to your children? Because if you give them something and they won't have it, what have you given them? And we're not pushing against anything. There's some of the best parents in the whole wide world. They would move heaven and earth to make a good place for their kids and work 18 jobs to drag home something that they want to play with, that they throw in the trash. But it's okay if you feel like you're doing something good. Knock yourself out. At least you're not at home screwing up their lives by cramming these things down their throat that don't matter anyway. See, that's not a problem. But if you can just engage, listen to your children. Listen to your children. They'll be a great comfort and help to you. Great, great will be your joy. If you could just get off of it a little bit and listen to what your children are actually saying, what they're asking, engage them. You will have to spend much less time in pretrial detention. If you could listen to your children, engage them, have conversation, and not just pretend, but care about their individual opinion, and allow them the ability to activate and engage those choices. There are people who are grown whose parents still lay their clothes out for them. They've never had to choose which color pant and which color shirt they're going to wear. They've never had to choose. So if they got into a position one day out there in the nebulous near future where they actually had to fend for themselves, guess what? They'd be lost and undone. That would be the deal breaker. That'd be the straw that broke the camel's back. It would do them in. But if they have an opportunity to choose, and if they mess it up, okay, let them mess it up. You can't have this just overwhelming lockdown control. And if you do that, try it. And then they'll get in such control that they'll find themselves in the penal institution because they want every aspect of their life controlled. And then you're going, my baby's in jail. Yeah, because you didn't give him a single choice. And you told him what time he was going to eat. You told him what he was going to do. You told him how he was going to be. You told him what he was going to have. You told him how it was going to work out. You told him when he was going to go to bed. You told him what he could watch on TV. You told him. So he finds himself in and out of the hooskow just because it's like if there's no place like home.
Or they, what's that line? They say, I'm tired of being told what to do. I'm going to join the Army
because I'm sick and damn tired of people telling me what to do. Yeah, there you go.
Now, here's an interesting thing. What is the image of the Army that the young person has that he doesn't notice the irony? Because they don't. Or maybe they do, but they claim it's a kind of freedom. What is the image the kid is thinking the Army gives them? Maybe an excuse to be away from the home. Maybe that's all.
No, what they have at home.
But why do they say it's the opposite? I'm tired of being told what to do. I'm going to join the Army. And people would say to him, well, you're just going to be told more what to do. If you said that to the person, would he stop? No, he'd go join the Army because he thinks he's getting away from being told what to do. So
exactly.
What is the Army image they have? It's distorted, but what?
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with the Army. It has everything to do with the individual human creator saying, I'm going to choose for me. You don't understand. I'm going to choose for me. Oh, no, you're not. I'm going to help you. Well, okay. Yes, ma'am. And then they go do what they want to do. So it's just so much easier to just engage it right out of the chute of what's your opinion? What is your preference? What do you like? What do you dislike? Why? Turn it around.
But you didn't get an answer on why do they... They're going to the Army, and it doesn't matter what image they have of the Army, though they must know that the Army is a place where you're told what to do, and they're trying to find an environment where they're told what to do, even though they're claiming they don't want
that. No, that is the example, but that is the exception. It's with anything. It's not just particularly the Army that is that. It's larger than that. It becomes a place where they safely can be on their own and have all the comforts of home. They tell you what time you're going to get up. They tell you what time you're going to go to bed. They tell you what you're going to do today. They tell you how to do this. They're going to hopefully allow you through this structure that they are requiring. The structure that they're requiring can then make their own preferences and choices.
So they want to be told what to do, but to them, the Army is a different lab where they can do a little more choice about being told what to do than they do at home. Okay.
Sure.
The Army, it looks like a little more freedom to operate in the box of being told what to do.
But if you don't want your child to go and serve in the armed forces, and we think that's wonderful, it's as good a suicide as any. Pipe bombs are real handy, too, but maybe they're maybe faster. Maybe that's the faster path to your joy. But if you don't want your kids in the military, then from the very first day that you see them on planet Earth, you say, welcome to planet Earth, do you prefer Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines? And you start them off, and you give them no choice other than, well, I'd like to go to college. After you get your 4 years of service, enlisted service, or after you're a colonel, or after this, or after that, and all day, every day, tell them how they're going to be in the Army. We're in the Army now. We're not hooked to a plow. And mares eat oats, and does eat oats, and little bears will probably eat ivy, but we're not sure. But you get into a place where push it, and I'll tell you before God, they'll do anything other than serve in the armed forces. Anything.
Now, that's called reverse psychology. Is that a suitable term, or would you have a better term?
there is a better term. They, individual human creator, will decide the fastest path to their joy. And any time another human being, pardon me, you're in my space, and any time, pardon me, you're in my space, if you don't get out of my space near you, one's going to get a whip in. Remember we had that earlier elevator conversation? Mm-hmm. The same thing is true with the little ones or those maturing. They're going to come into a place where they are going to sort out their own space.
But the term reverse psychology, there's a better way. I'm saying that's the parent approach. They say, I'm going to make sure that I'm told they're going in the Army. Tell them that every day. And I know that'll they won't go in the Army, and that's what I want. So it's called reverse psychology to do that to the kid. Is there a better term than that to call that method, that approach, to make sure the kid doesn't go in the Army?
Well, yes, because it's not for you to say. See, once you get the first part that we were talking about, that part, the reverse of psychology won't be required.
Yeah, that's still within the idea you're telling me.
If you're speaking, if you learn to communicate, you learn how to love yourself, and then you can communicate with your children and love your children, they'll love you back, then they'll ask your opinion. Dad, I think I was kind of interested in seeing about this. I want to drive a tank. I think that just sounds like the coolest thing ever is to drive a tank. And you go, okay, son, would you like us to get a tank of our very own? Mm-hmm. The Homeland Security is doing a very good job. We were thinking of putting M16s around the house and getting us a Hudson and a tank. And they're really great. China's got them on sale now down at the Costco. We'll just buy a tank. And, you know, we've got a lot of property. You can just drive that tank all over the place and just shoot things and just have you a big old time. Wow, that sounds so great. That's what I really, really, really want is to drive a tank. But if you say no, 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 they're going to look for a way to express that desire of driving a tank. And then we're in the Army now.
You started off that they want to drive a tank, and then you offered to get them a tank.
No, you listen to why they would like enjoy that. What is it about that that's appealing? What about them that would make them have that desirous opinion?
Right, but that's not what you replayed in that conversation. You said you tell them they can have the tank, buy it at the Costco from China, and do it at home. Now, that drives them into the Army if you offer them the tank here?
No, that allows them, if they realize they could have that capacity, they may decide they don't want to ride their bicycle down the steps. Once they realize that they could actually get up the money and buy a tank and drive it around the backyard, that might not be as much fun.
Okay, so this is to the point that so they don't go in the Army, or they may realize, oh, I'll go in the Army. It's easier to get a tank that way. Which way is this going?
Both, either. There's nothing wrong with serving in the military. We're talking about the engaging children that allow them to master their own choices and desires. And if you'll listen to them, they will include you in their directional choices. And it becomes a complementing co-creation. Then they're not doing it despite you. They're doing it with your blessing or with full information, or they'll convince you why it is that they want to be a soldier and how great a soldier they are, and on and on and on and on and on and on. So we're talking about children in relationship with parents and parenting. The Army has very little or nothing to do with it, you see. But if they're making the directional decision to throw it in your face, that rarely serves them well. It certainly can, but that's the long way about it. If you could do the short way about it, if you engage your children and talk to them and listen to them and give a care about their opinion and have them where they're thoroughly understood, many, 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 many choices that are made by what you call the young people of this generation, they would choose very differently.
Right. Now,
if you're the parent and you have a good enough relationship with your children that they could talk to you about anything with no repercussion whatsoever, there'd be very little diseases. If they could say, what's smack, what's crack, what's ice, what's hepatitis, what's venereal disease? What's HIV? What's Pavlova?
Okay, you've said that a child asks, well, how do we get babies at the age of 7? You tell them the simple version. What age do you tell them about
when they ask
sexual intercourse? They have to indicate that. Well, maybe they
when
don't.
When they ask. When they ask. They'll ask.
They'll ask the next level. They might ask when they're 5 and accept that. Then a few years later, they'll ask again.
They may ask it too. Mom, why do they call this little thing on my vagina clitoris? Why do some people call it a clitoris? What's the difference there? Well, if they ask that at that level, then you answer and engage it to the best you know.
Because they're adults. They're basically adults who know more than you. That's how you have to look at your kid.
And you may have to say many times to your child, well, you know, honey, that's a really good question. And Daddy doesn't have a clue, but I guess we could do some research and look and see what other people think that is, and we might be able to better develop an opinion of how we feel about it. We, meaning we'll find out together, and you can have an opinion, and Dad can have an opinion, and we might even conform with how we think about it. And once you give a child that kind of capacity of power and recognize their power, then guess what? You will rarely have to lord over your children.
Any questions in the audience about these issues?
The biggest question that's coming across is about the new birth control.
Yeah, not have any kids.
With all this rearing of the children.
Right. You don't want to have any. Okay.
They're like, you know what? Maybe this isn't what I thought this was going to be. Maybe let's wait.
And that would be interesting because maybe people want to have kids so they can have someone to boss around. And you just pointed out, that's going to cause a lot of problems. And so a lot of people say, I'm not going to have kids because it doesn't work. I can't get the boss around. And I want to have kids so I have someone to boss around. Is that the perverse reason some of these people are in birth control?
No, it would be more simply of coming into a place where they don't adequately know how to love themselves.
Mm.
So the taking on of enjoying, co-creating of a life, then what happens? That becomes, it would be almost just the tip of the iceberg. It would be the smack in the face. What they call it now when babies are having babies. You know, why would a 13-year-old figure this out and then all of a sudden come up pregnant when babies are having babies? That's not a new concept. They used to marry at 13. This is now, it's out of wedlock and a very bad thing. Well, then it wasn't a bad thing. You just got married.
So on one level, I respect the way people have gone through spans and mixed it up and create all kinds of different weird environments. But on some major level, Ion says when humans first showed up in very rough, non-technological worlds, they did that, lived that for a long time, but then they devolved. Ion sort of looks at this increasing civilized technological thing as a de-evolution.
Well, the contrast has certainly increased.
The contrast, right. They had contrast, but less intensity or something before.
They took it as is. They didn't get all tangled up about it. It's like, well, it just is, and it's okay.
They didn't even ask why.
They did not ask why. They certainly did not ask why. They had parameters.
They had rules, because that comes with the human brain. You can have rules.
Even the mosaic stretch, they wanted the law. Got to have the law.
That's later. That's what we're talking about, very early societies. Maybe there were no such early societies as anthropologists project, these primitive hunter-gatherers. Were there such kind of societies as that?
There were. But see, they were not even driven to write it down, so it became empirically referenced to anything, Bob. They just lived.
Yeah, and that's for a long time. How do you say without the word time? That happened for a great span of timing.
Many generations enjoyed the privilege of living without the meme of the judging of time.
Can you say millions? Can you say millions of generations?
Gosh, we can say gazillions of generations.
Right, because there's no end.
We know lots of big words, Bob. You won't imagine imagine what we can come up with.
Right, but the point is, you're going on this point. There's no beginning or ending, so it is gazillions of generations.
Yes, very easily.
Very easily. It's been a lot of generations.
Mm-hmm.
And Don Fisco loves the fact that there's a place to be physical.
It's the essence of creation. Do you see, what good is eternity if there's no paralleled experience? You don't understand what eternity is. We'll be in the moment eternally, or we're coming up to an eternal moment. You use these words and you don't have any clear idea what you mean.
Yeah, because it's an object. It's not observable. It's only a relationship. You can't have eternity unless you have the contrast of, quote, time.
Correct. You can't have a resurrection if nobody's willing to die.
So I should say time. You have the contrast of the physical as opposed and in contrast with the non-physical or eternity. So eternity and what would we call this world that we experience? Is it cyclical? If we can't use the word time, what word would you say about duration that one experiences in the physical?
Well, our hope is that that physical comes to a place where they start learning it to have it internally.
Do you begin with no concept of time and that you're in the physical, but you somehow allow the non-physical to rub up even closer, so you say, I didn't even enter the physical. Oh, I am still, there's a slight physical, but I'm resonating with the non-physical, the non-creative, and that's the ongoing moreness of existence, the fullness of existence. Why is there a wind there? Is JW outside?
It's wind. The wind is howling and raining. It is deliciously wonderful.
And you're outside?
Absolutely, in the rain.
That's what I like about Ion and JW. They move around. I look at different mediums on YouTube. They have footage of them. They sit there in one posture and just hold that sacred posture for the whole trance. You know what I mean?
And if you look at those, if they have any longevity, what you find is they find that they're forfeiting their physicalness, engaging the non-physical part of them, because they won't allow themselves to sort of go with it. We have an example. ICU in the baby ICUs, when they have to have open heart surgeries and things, they love the little fellas, because if they have to have a central line, they'll move. Well, you get a teenager or somebody, and they'll hold them at their head a certain way because they have the central line, and they don't want it to hurt, and they don't want to mess it up, and they don't want there to be problems, to the point that they'll get a stiff neck.
Mm.
And then they have to recover from the stiff neck, which is much more uncomfortable than a central line or a PICC line. But just go with it. And, you know, stretch, move. Don't be bothered by it, even though you have it. Don't be bothered by it. And then that experience can be very delicious, and then you don't have to get over a sore neck. Yeah, actually having to have a good, easy, accessible port for whatever they're doing to you. So they prefer the little fellas because they'll move and stretch and yawn and twist and they'll get comfortable.
What's an ICU?
Intensive care unit.
Oh, okay. So in that world, all right. They got
a central line is the big thing they put in your neck.
Oh, I see. Okay. So as I've been listening to Ion for many months.
At least for 3 readings, isn't it?
That I've been listening.
Yes.
About 3 I've taken in.
Okay, there you go, at least.
Yeah,
minimum of 3, maybe. Goodness gracious.
I just fake it till I make it, okay.
There you go. And how's that working for you? Pretty good? We'll go with that then, absolutely, good.
Yeah, now the notion I got after these 3 readings was that there's not an idea I've heard of that is useful. Maybe ideas are useful in terms of inventing something, but it looks like most notions that people have are sort of questioned by Ion.
Okay, yes, well, now let's explain that. That's perfect. That's a perfect place. Do you know what notions are, Bob?
Passing fannies.
No. Notions are what you have in the sewing box for leftover pieces that you might need in the future.
Oh, yeah.
It's an extra bobbin. It's a spool of thread to match this garment. So if the hem comes out, you have the notions in place that you can repair the breach and have that on hand, on standby. That's problem with notions?
That you don't use them right now. They're not useful.
Well, most times they don't use them ever. That's
right.
Why if you look in the sewing boxes, they just become so voluminous that you have to have a Mack truck to drive them around.
Okay.
Because you're always going to be in that place where this is going to tear up and that's going to break and this isn't going to last and get this and get that. And if something goes on and on and on and on and on to the point, it's kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, if you get the notion, then I guess that may be something you should plan for. So you better get an extra bobbin to go with that, because that first notion might not be enough notion, and then you'll be notionless.
It's like most of the institutions are silly, not just notions. Education, yeah, maybe education, because that's a foundational institution for most civilizations. And ION is playing down the educational role.
No, no, no. We're not playing. Well, yes, you. We're desperately trying not to push against things, but you're making it ever so appealing for non-physical to say, wait a minute, easy there, Trigger. Hold on just a minute. The moral of the point is if education allows a young, fresh, bright mind to master the impossibilities of life, their world, things that they would want to know about, find out about, to engage, to proffer, then it's delicious. But every time in history, when you start looking at it, the very successful ones are the ones that get beat out of that process. See,
the successful ones in history are the ones who get beat out of the process of mastering impossibilities.
Or education.
The ones who are most successful in education are the ones who get beat up. Maybe that's what you're saying.
Beat out. They don't fit the mold. They won't do their homework. They won't learn
homework.
They won't do the work. They won't do this. They won't do that. They'll do it, but they won't do it. They'll get the right answer, but they will not show their work, and they make an F. You got to show your work. You got to show how you got it. Well, I just know. Well, that's not good enough. You're a cheat. So that's our first problem, is you're not complying. It's compliance. That's the issue. That's what's wrong with your government. You got to comply. Everybody's got to make the same number of pennies the same way. The same examples have to be wrought. The tax returns have to all be the same. The business models have to all be the same or they don't work. You can only consume this many pennies worth of food. You can only have these foods available. You can't have this and you can't have that. You have to have this kind of house. Conformity, 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 and that's the standard by which all shall be judged. And then you have these people that are outside the box, and they call them insane. But then that's also in the category of genius as well.
Oh, geez.
It's a malady. Genius.
So you were start off not saying exactly, but you were saying those that are successful in education are most beat out. Oh, I see. Successful not on the standard way, they might fail. But
well, if they're standard, then they're not extraordinary.
Yeah, you're saying that those that do well in school and pass all the marks and get high marks are rather ordinary and not going to be very creative? Is that
what they've complied, yes.
Yeah,
they've learned how to fit the mold to do their homework the way their teacher says they should do it. They've learned how to become standardized. They even call it testing, standardized testing. Now, we're not pushing against the ones that excel. That's just sometimes as natural. And what we have found historically, if you look at the children who are in the experience, the Sedwell schools are a great example, where kids are just beaming beyond reproach because they learn about whatever they want to learn about.
Mm.
If they want to learn about fishing, they can go learn about fishing. Or if they're in the third grade and they want to learn about astral physicists, they can do that. If they want to learn about medicine, they can learn about it. There's no limitation. They get the parts that they want to do of what they're interested in. Then it becomes a sponge effect where the sponge isn't already full of absorption. It's not at maximum absorption level. So then they're able to gather and glean much, much, much more because they're actually absorbing. They're drawn to whatever that is. If you get a little kid who wants to play with race cars and the matchbox cars and play cars, and you want to read and make him learn vocabulary words, and he's kind of like going, hell with this noise. I'm good. What does this got to do with matchbox cars? Then you can teach them about the verb. You can learn the vocabulary having to do or relegated with the parts of an automobile. Wow. Then all of a sudden, those vocabulary words would be very meaningful. What is a manifold? How do you spell it? What does a manifold do? Where is it on your car? If you did it that way, they would absorb every dynamic of it, and they would just confound you with the knowledge that they would embrace.
Okay. The idea of, was it impossibilities, creating impossibilities? What was the...
Mastering impossibilities.
I would say that in my life that I had an aspect of that, because I always was interested in talking to the dead, and then I did talk to the evergreens and talk to the dead. So I actually did impossible stuff from many mainstream opinions' point of view, right? I did.
Sure.
I talked to dead people, so I sort of gravitate toward that way.
Many call you crazy.
That's
so
right.
Fair.
I'm a genius. I'm sick, need to be institutionalized, but I avoid it.
No, you don't have to be institutionalized. You got Carolyn.
They say, oh, he's in good hands. Sorry.
That's exactly right.
I'm under medical supervision. Okay.
strict medical supervision. I'm sorry. I can't engage that. I'll have to check with my PA to see how I'm doing.
Everybody thinks we're married. No, that's a cover story.
What a nursemaid. You could do worse there.
This Carol should tell her story at the shower. What happened to the shower today, Carol?
This
public shower down by the beach.
Chubby guy, probably in his late 30s, early 40s, he came up and was showering in the shower next to me, outdoor shower. And he said, wow, what am I going to tell my wife that I was showering with a beautiful woman at the beach today? And I looked at him and I said, well, you could tell her that you were showering with a grandmother and maybe she wouldn't mind. and he kind of looked stunned. And then he said, well, yeah, she's not a grandmother.
Oh, he started to say, grandmother's looking good.
There you go.
Okay, so that's my medical care person. How about that?
Well, there you go. And then, of course, you could very easily and transversely say, you know, you're absolutely right. And what would I tell my grandchildren? That I was showering with a man who was admiring my wonderful, voluptuous body, and he was 265 pounds and didn't know which end was up. <You know? laughs>
Okay, so there is a school, Karen, I read about it 40 years ago, Summerhill in Scotland or someplace, where the teacher, the founder, was encouraging kids to just do what they want.
That led into the Sedwell School. There's a lot in the U.S.
So Sedwell, I never heard of them, are modeled on the Summerhill thing.
They are.
Yeah, because Edgar Z. Friedenberg, a professor at Dalhousie, who I spent a lot of time with sitting in on his classes, because I never took classes, but I sat in on them with the best minds wherever I was, and he talked about how it didn't work because kids were not able to get jobs and function and comply, and he thought that was more important as they moved into the 70s and recession and less job opportunities. He was a libertarian, but he did point out that question.
Uh-huh. So now you're getting to the point. So education is to teach you how to get a job.
That's how it was by the 70s, because it was so obsolete. Kids knew they weren't learning anything, but they said, well, I'll just go there to get the ticket.
Is that good, to get a job? But wait now. Most of your uneducated ones don't have a job, but yet the most successful, what you call successful ones, most of those have no college degree.
Well, that's successful. But then there's the in-between who do the middle level work. They all got degrees in that and have, you know, frustrating lives within the middle because they don't stand out. They're not on the level you just mentioned of being really successful, and they didn't have a degree. It's the middle rift.
No, they were more focused on compliance than they were creation. When you start the creativity model where you're actually inventing and creating, then that's a very different dynamic than what you can or allowed. You notice the difference. We say relax and allow about 10 million times every conversation.
Yeah.
There's a difference between to allow and allowed. Allowed means that someone else has to give permissible attention. To allow means it's all on you. So if you are the allower, then you would never be allowed.
Those that complied in the 70s and 80s, those old schools all collapsed. Education quotas are a mess now anyway, so maybe it should have done the Summerhill. You're saying Sedwell came along and picked up the ball, and they do it maybe even better than Sedwell.
Oh, they're
I mean, they even do it better than Summerhill.
They're fabulous because they're grown to such a degree now that, like, if they have a child who's interested in some specific dynamic of something that the staff is not capable to sojourn down that ergonomic
rabbit hole.
Of rabbit holeness.
Yeah.
They actually have capacity where they'll bring folks in. They'll bring them in to teach them and show them. Some of their greatest success stories are, there's several, Boston, they're in Asheville, they're all over the place. And this little boy who was just pretty bright, and together they were working on chemistry. And he wasn't interested in chemistry. He was interested in fly fishing. So they had to bring someone in, and they spent about a couple of months with him on fly fishing. And when he got through with fly fishing, then he went in and he started talking about angles and cosines and tangents and rhythms and waves and how you'd fly the line back and forth and which angles. And actually developed quite a geography out of this whole rhythm of the way wavelengths are and how it affects from the control of the caster. And it actually just became just spot on, time well spent, because then he was able to notice on his own volition the importance of even considering a cotangent or a wavelength or how that applies with how you point, shoot, fly to catch the fish's fancy. Because it's not about the angle, it's about how the fish is attracted to your fly.
So would you recommend that if in the Sedwell School, I don't know if they have religious instruction, but would Ion suggest...
They do not.
Yeah, play down any moralistic or religious instruction. Would you agree with that?
No, never. No. That's a great backbone. That provides a great deal of contrast, so they get to choose. But make it to a point where you have comparative religions, if that's what you want to do. Teach them about all of them. People get real confused when they listen to us long, but we don't push against any. We love and appreciate all dogma. Every dogma that it is, there's never been a dogma we didn't like. It's just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And if we get our dogma just so, then sometimes we even like Katmas. Oh, no, Karmas. Yeah, cats, dogs, karmas, dogmas. We like them all. All them beasts. Them beasts, we love them all.
And you like it because they create contrast?
They do indeed. The issue that comes along is when you start painting gods that are not you.
Painting gods that are not gods, singular or plural?
Well, what's the difference?
Painting gods that are not you.
Yes. Or let's say it this way. Worshipping gods that are not in the image of the creator. There you go. That'll clean it up so nobody has a problem with it. When you start painting gods, when you start putting God on the cross, then we have a